This recording was made during the coffee break of the Diocese of Bristol's conference at Stoke Gifford. You will notice that immediately outside the room in which we are recording, there are 400 people having a coffee break. Today I'm in Stoke Gifford with Right Reverend Stephen Cottrell. So the first question is, do you ever drink tea?
I do drink tea. I think I probably drink tea and coffee in equal measure. I'm a bit obsessive about what I have at certain times of the day. So if you gave me a cup of coffee when I got up in the morning, I think it would be like poison. I have to have tea first thing in the morning. And I'm the same in the afternoon. It's very kind of English, isn't it? In the afternoon it has to be tea. So yes, I do.
So at the moment you are drinking coffee?
At the moment I'm drinking coffee because it's mid-morning, you see. So I'm allowed a choice mid-morning according to my strange rules that I give to myself.
Yes. And what is your favourite cup of tea?
Make of tea. I like strong tea. So I tend to prefer Assam or Orange Pekoe. They're really nice teas. But actually at home I tend to drink Kenyan tea. The Diocese of Chelmsford has a very strong link with Kenya. I go there, not every year, but certainly every other year. And I bring tea home with me from the tea plantations and the cooperatives there. And if we run out of tea, I go looking for Kenyan tea.
Wow. Well, that's great. We were in Mauritius a few years ago and we brought some tea back from there. And there's something about having been somewhere and knowing where it's produced.
Yeah, which is special, isn't it? Tea I'm drinking at the moment, I was in the factory 2 months ago seeing it being made. Well, maybe not that particular bit of tea, but it was great.
So the question which I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I definitely don't think Christianity is dying. I don't actually think it's sleeping either, but so I think I really want to argue with the statement. I think there's certainly evidence that the church is sleeping and certain ways of being the church are probably dying. Well, I think definitely dying, certain ways of being the church. But I think it's a big mistake to get the church and Christianity so close together that you see them as being one and the same thing. Christianity, our life in Christ, that goes on and will go on, and nothing can stop that. But the way that we express it through the church is very important, but the way that we express it through the church, that is constantly changing. And I suppose in every age, and perhaps particularly in ours, we see that certain ways of being the church are no longer sustaining the Christian faith and commending it in the ways that may have been the case in the past. And so, yeah, those ways of being the church are dying. Some other ways of being the church are sleeping, but there's so many examples of life and new life and renewal that I simply don't see it that way. Sometimes people say to me, what's the church like in... I serve the Chelmsford Diocese, which is East London and Essex. They say, what's the church like in your diocese? And I say, oh, it's all over the place. And I mean that both literally, it's all over the place. We still have a presence in every community, over 600 churches, and we're planting new ones. So it's a growing number, not a decreasing number. And we're all over the place in the sense that I could take you to a church next Sunday where it's flourishing, it's thriving, there's people coming, you know, it's a wonderful vision of what the Christian life could be. And then I could take you to one, you know, a mile down the road where you'll think, what's going to be here in 5 years' time? So it's a really, really mixed picture, and I think we should be cautious about jumping to big conclusions about that.
And that's what we're finding. So we have a very mixed economy of churches where I am. So I'm the single stipendiary. We have a parish administrator 9 hours a week. So we're the salaried ones. We have 8 services every Sunday across the group, but what we find is our growth is in the non-Sunday services that we're doing, both in the past 10 years, both in our Book of Common Prayer midweeks, which are growing, and in our children's work, our Messy Church, those sorts of worship are growing for us. But it's Sunday morning is, and it has become an intractable problem for me in our local culture.
I mean, these things... I mean, the church has always had to address and adapt to the cultures in which it finds itself. Not the message itself, of course, not the content of the Christian faith, but, as it were, the cultural clothes within which it's expressed. And one of the big features of our society over the last, must be 20, 30 years, I can't remember when Sunday trading first came in and really started changing the nature of Sunday, but Sunday is no longer what it was when I was a child. You know, I think somebody once said that it was the BBC's serialisation of Forsyte Saga which killed Evensong. You know, people now have choices about what to do on a Sunday, which make it hard for those who are members of the Christian community, let alone those that are not. So it seems to me to be a kind of missiological no-brainer that the missionary church that God wants us to be must adapt to the culture in which it's set, and therefore if you put all your eggs in the Sunday morning basket, then you are limiting yourself as to who is likely to come, and you're limiting yourself to the very committed, and we don't want to be a church of the very committed. We want to be the church for everyone. That's the historic vocation of the Church of England. But it's the calling of every church to be the church for everyone. So we have to find ways of adapting. And I notice that it's the churches that adapt, both in the styles of their worship, but also at the times of day and the days in which they worship. I mean, it's not an automatic magical formula, but those ones which are more culturally adaptable are the ones that are growing.
It doesn't report on our Sunday attendance figures, though, which I think I'm going to visit the Church Army and talk to them about.
Yeah.
Actually, should we throw away normal Sunday attendance as a useful statistic?
Yes. Well, it was, funnily enough, it was me who, it's because of some research I did in Huddersfield 20 years ago that the weekday attendance figure is included at all. I did some research into a whole deanery in Huddersfield 20 years ago on actual patterns of attendance, got every church to call a register at every service, and we discovered that in every single instance where a church put on a weekday service, that service was growing, sometimes only very, very modestly, but it was growing. But of course many churches weren't putting on anything other than Sunday, and so the Church of England then started measuring weekday attendance. But I go in the diocese where I serve, I often go to churches where they have like a messy church thing on a Wednesday, and I say to them, do you put it in the register? And they say, well, sometimes they do, but more often than not, they don't. And we're shooting ourselves in the foot, because the annual return and statistic for that church will look like it's declining, yet probably their biggest service of the month is not put in the register, and it should be.
We have, over the past few years, got really pedantic about including everything that could be considered worship by the Fresh Expressions definition in the register, whether or not it's in the building or wherever it is. So once a month on a Friday afternoon we run a messy church type thing. There's no meal. The primary school in Killearn is shut on Friday afternoons, so that's our niche. We have 30 children and 20 adults. And that is our biggest single act of worship in the month.
I think it's an interesting... I mean, obviously, I think we are shooting ourselves in the foot, but it's also... It also says something about our ecclesiology, that we consider these things to be stepping stones towards real church, which is what happens on Sunday morning. And that's the mindset change we've got to make, that there's... You know, every expression of church is real church. And these things are not stepping stones towards something else, you know, the gold standard of Sunday morning. And I think we're winning that battle, but it's slow.
I'm going to make sure that all my congregations listen to this.
Yeah.
Because I've been saying that for about 18 months. But it is a cultural change for people.
It is.
I've shortened question four to something which might make sense now.
Yeah.
So recently I have found some friends who had strong, committed evangelical Christian faith in the late 1980s have left church. But an Anglo-Catholic friend speaks of church going, whatever the sense of his personal faith. And I have started to wonder if an emphasis on personal conversion has encouraged or even compelled those with doubt to leave those churches. I wonder what you think about that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting observation. I think I'd perhaps come at it from a slightly different angle. There's a story I heard years ago of a person who goes to their bishop and says, Bishop, I've lost my faith. And the bishop responds, well, don't worry, we've still got ours. Which at first you think, well, that's not a very sensitive answer. But actually I think reveals an important truth. That I think, without realising it, in many bits of the church, perhaps exemplified by a certain sort of evangelicalism, though not exclusively to that bit of the church, we've bought into the idea of each human being this individual with agency and control over their own lives and their own decisions. The Christian faith has always been corporate. It's never been private. And that's the trouble. By emphasising the personal, there's a danger it becomes private. So I have my faith, and I've either got it or I've lost it. And we all know in the Christian journey, well, the Christian journey is the way of the cross. And there will be, Jesus makes it very, very clear, there will be times of difficulty, darkness, barrenness, times when Jesus himself experienced, you know, the horrifying absence of God, where he struggled to know God's will. So really, we shouldn't be surprised if that happens to us in our Christian life. And yet, if our model of faith is me and God having our relationship, there's not much to help us and sustain us when the dark times come, which they surely will. So I think I'm a more corporate, which you may want to call more Catholic, because the word Catholic means that which accords to wholeness. That vision of faith, I mean Catholic with a small c, that vision of a corporate faith may mean that those who are nurtured into that understanding of church are going to be, it's not so much they're better able to face the darkness, they're less likely to think that their faith has been lost. Rather, of course, as the great spiritual writers tell us, just when you think you're losing your faith, when you go into the wilderness, that's actually when you might be just about to find it in a very new and dramatic and vibrant way. So there's a tragedy, really, that this experience of wilderness might, as the wilderness is in all the Bible, place of discovery, but also a place of barrenness and being stripped back. You know, there's a terrible tragedy that somebody's actually about to really gain some deep, rich insights into faith, but it feels like losing it. So we need each other. You know, we need a corporate vision of faith. And we need that whether our church tradition is evangelical or Catholic or whatever.
Some of them have said that they will see me, but they don't necessarily want me to record what they're saying. So it's I'm going to pursue this a bit more over the next couple of months. I'm really intrigued by it. The next question is, if you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
I think I'd change the name. I think I'd change it from the Church of England to the Church for England. Do you want me to say more?
I do. I was about to say, yeah, why?
I'd never really thought about this before till you asked me the question. But you gave me warning of this question, only about 10 minutes warning. What would I change? And I need to think about it myself. Why I'm saying this? But I think it's about we are the established church of this land. We have been here for a very long time. there is in many bits of the Church of England's life perhaps some complacency, some entitlement, perhaps this feeling that because we have always been here, so we will always be here. And so that idea that we are the Church of England, kind of fixed, entitled, content, maybe we need to be shaken out of that. And a little change of name might just provoke us into actually thinking why we're here. We're the Church for England. And therefore, unless we are active in service to the communities where we are set, then we've kind of misunderstood what our vocation and our purpose is about. So I think a little name change, just the changing of a single word, might contribute to that mindset change, which is what I think needs to happen if the church is to not die and wake up from its slumber and more churches flourish and thrive. You know, I said earlier the churches that seem to be growing are the ones that are culturally adaptable. Well, I stand by that statement, but I think there's a more important observation. The churches that are flourishing are the ones that have a servant heart and understand that the reason they exist is to serve God by serving their community.
We have our fresh expression, which is actually an authorised, licensed Anglican place of worship. It's called Heart for Rudlow. It wasn't my first choice, but it was chosen by the small community of people who gathered to form it. They wanted to have it. It has a letter form in it, which I find very dated, but now we're five and a half years in, and that's a well-established worshipping community.
Well, there's lots of there's loads of other changes I probably would like to make if I stopped to think about it, and I may even change my mind on this one if you ask me again tomorrow. But right now, I think that mindset change about so that the Church of England is a servant church. That's what I long for.
Next question. What's the best thing about Essex?
Oh, well, this is a difficult question because there's so much that is wonderful about Essex. It's gobby, it's entrepreneurial, it's incredibly diverse. But I think the very best thing probably must be its oysters. The Essex oysters from Mersey and Colchester. I love oysters. They must be the most delicious oysters in the world. In fact, Essex is famous for... There's three foods which are famous worldwide from Essex. Maldon salt, Tiptree jam, which go to any hotel in the world, and you'll get Wilkins jam from Tiptree, and oysters. So of all the many, many wonderful things, I'm Essex born and bred as well as being the bishop there, of all the many, many things, I think in the end I have to say the seafood.
Right, I'm going to Chelmsford next week, so I shall inquire of the friend I'm going to visit about the seafood.
I was born and brought up in Leon Sea, and there's whelks and cockles and razor clams, all sorts of goodies, but I think the oysters... since, I think, the 14th century, there's been an oyster feast in Colchester, and you basically just eat shed loads of oysters. It's a very wonderful thing.
The last question is, what is your favourite thing which begins with T?
Oh, my favourite thing... Oh, you didn't give me warning of this one, or if you did, I've just forgotten. My favourite thing will begin with... Well, it must be Tottenham Hotspurs, because I'm a Spurs fan. And very disappointed that we lost in the FA Cup semi-final last week. But yeah, I think it must be that.
So, coming back, I was thinking of Tottenham cake as you were talking about that, actually, which is a cake that was traditionally made by the Quakers in Tottenham to serve at the ground. There we go. So I need to say thank you very much for spending some time with me and answering my questions today. It's been great.
Thank you very much, Janet.